Get ready for Ready Radio with Doug and Amy. It's emergency preparedness for everyone. Brought to you by TruPrep. For all your prepping needs, visit TruPrep online at truprep.com or visit a TruPrep store in Roswell or Marietta. Listen in as Doug and Amy provide helpful tips on how to get ready for anything that comes your way. And now, your host, Doug and Amy.
Welcome to Ready Radio, everyone. This week, we have a very poignant topic to talk about. It's about earthquakes. And the big earthquake that happened in San Francisco on Sunday brought this topic to our minds, and something that we think is important to bring to you on how to be ready for, you know, a real disaster that's happening in real time. And this week, again, we have a special co-host in, filling in for Amy. We have Aaron, who was with us last week when we talked about martial law. Amy is taking a bit of a sabbatical right now, and hopefully she'll be able to return soon. But in the meantime, Aaron is a avid prepper. She is very interested in homesteading and canning. She has lots of information on some of the more practical arts that have been forgotten. And I'm hopeful that, you know, whenever Amy is unavailable, that Aaron would be willing to come in and maybe have some future shows on some more of these homesteading topics. But in the meantime, given the urgency that I feel regarding earthquakes, we're going to focus on that today. As we get ready for a major disaster like an earthquake, we have a lot that we have to consider and think about. And the incident in California this last week really has brought my mind, at least, towards what can we do and what are the after effects and what do people do? Because I remember the earthquake back, I don't remember what year, Aaron, you might recall when the World Series earthquake happened out in California.
It was October 17th of 1989.
Okay. And that was a major earthquake.
It was a major earthquake. It was 6.7. It was 6.7. It was. Hold on.
The one this last week was 6.0.
And the one in San Francisco was a 6.9.
6.9.
It was 6.9.
As we go up a number, that's just not an increase, but it's an increase in order of magnitude. In fact, that's where that phrase comes from, an increase in order of magnitude. It comes from the Richter scale. And we use it in everyday parlance now, but the difference between a 6 and a 7 is massive, and the difference between a 6 and an 8 is even more massive. I mean, we're talking about a huge increase in the amount of disturbance in the ground. So it was a much bigger quake back in 89, but we didn't see a lot of the same after effects because we've had much better codes and much better regulation of the building structures and the highways and everything else, and people are better prepared in California than they ever have been for an earthquake.
Well, the one in 89 was the last earthquake of its magnitude for 25 years. This is the first time it's happened in that area again with a earthquake of this magnitude. And so the people there, they're very prepared for earthquakes in general. I mean, it's kind of a way of life. They get little tremors all the time. Mm-hmm. But a large earthquake kind of is that wake-up call of, hey, are we ready?
And this is something that's going to bring what I'm hoping is national attention to earthquake preparedness in a way that it isn't just California's problem. But we can see that being prepared makes a difference because there was a lot more loss of life back in 89. There was a lot more property damage in 89 than what happened this last week, primarily because we have been preparing for this earthquake for 25 years. People are more aware of what to do, how to best respond. Buildings that were damaged then were repaired in such a way to make them sturdier and more efficient and to be able to withstand the tremors and the quakes. And all of this played together to decrease the amount of stress and trauma that was applied to the area. And that's a great thing. And that's something that, you know, local communities can do to really get into disaster preparedness, is to work through their local code and ordinances to make sure that people are building with the right materials and having the right safety precautions, making sure that your gas lines have a little bit of flexibility to them so they don't rupture the moment there's a minor quake. And California has done all this, and as loathed as I am to ever say that the California government is doing something right, because more often than not, they're not, this is something that they've done very well.
And they've had a lot of practice at it. I mean, practice makes perfect. You go in and you have every little tremor, every little earthquake. And from each one of these incidents, they have new experience that gets added to the pot.
I wish every country was as adept as California is at strengthening and maintaining their infrastructure in regards to earthquakes. Because just, I forget exactly what year it was. It was a couple of years ago that the Fukushima Daiichi plant went into a Category 7 meltdown over a tsunami and earthquake. Now, that was a massive earthquake. That
was 2011.
It was in 2011.
And it was like a 7 point.
No, I think it was a lot higher than that. I think it was a 9.0.
It was a 9.0. And the earthquake was bad enough, but following the earthquake was almost a pretty much immediate turnaround of a tsunami. So not only was the nuclear reactor damaged by the shaking, but then it was damaged by a huge wave.
The wave that hit Japan after that 9.0 earthquake off of the shore was 120 some feet tall. It went 6 miles inland and caused devastation. And I mean, there was something like a million structures that were damaged in some way or completely destroyed. There were hundreds of thousands of people injured and dead and missing, never found again, just wiped out to sea. Thousands and thousands of automobiles. I mean, the numbers are staggering.
The actual statistics on it was there were 5,889 confirmed deaths. So we're talking about almost 6,000 people that they knew exactly where they were and that they were indeed dead. But then you have 2,600 missing persons that were never accounted for, never found, never showed up again. I mean, I'm sure they were thought of, but nobody ever saw them again. And then you have the damage was staggering too. You know, 12,000 buildings completely collapsed, even more than that, partially collapsed. And so, you know, we have loss of life, loss of limb, loss of home.
And this isn't something that's, you know, localized just in, you know, these two incidents. But every time there's an earthquake, there's massive structural damage, there's loss of life. And most of the loss of life comes not from, having a building collapse on you, but it's from the secondary and ancillary damage that comes from broken gas mains, infected water, fires that burn out of control, the loss of social services.
Tsunamis carrying you out to sea.
And tsunamis carrying you out to sea, yeah. When the one that I'm most familiar with because of my time in Alaska was the 64 quake that hit Valdez. And this was, I think it was the second strongest earthquake in recorded history. And it when it hit Valdez, it leveled Valdez.
It was an 8.4.
An 8.4 compared to the 9.0, which destroyed the coastline of Japan. And then looking back at the 89 earthquake, which was a 6.9. I mean, that's a massive earthquake. And the shocks of it were enough to drop part of Anchorage 10 feet down. There was a new 10-foot cliff in Anchorage. There was huge lahars as the wet mud on the mountainsides around Anchorage. Anchorage is kind of in a bowl. There's mountains all the way around it, and then it comes down to the Cook Inlet and the Turnagain Arm. And all of that, where they had built houses on the sides of these hills, came crashing down from the earthquake. And the epicenter was more than 70 miles away from Anchorage, and yet all of this devastation happened 70 miles away. The tremendous force that was involved there. I mean, it's astounding when you think about two pieces of the earth moving against each other and the pressure building up until finally they slip. And that slip is the earthquake when you create a new fault and the earth juts up against itself. There's a place in Anchorage called Earthquake Park where you can walk through and see where the ground is up. I stayed, when I first got to Anchorage, I stayed at a little hotel that used to be on flat level ground with the rest of the city, but now it sits down in a hole. And the reason is because the ground shifted down so many feet that it changed the topography of the entire landscape. I mean, it is really impressive, the force and power of an earthquake.
Well, it makes you wonder about the hotel, how much damage it sustained. I mean, was it there when the earthquake occurred?
No, it was a new construction. But the Captain Cook Hotel was there, and when they went to reinforce it, I mean, it's a tall building. I think it's like, Oh, my goodness, 20 floors or something like that. I stayed in it a couple of times when I was at my prosecutorial training up there. But they, the way that they took care of the earthquake question is that as tall as the building is, they have iron pilings going down into the earth as deep as the building is tall to counterbalance. So as if it tries to sway, it has to sway all the way down, too, and it keeps it steady. I mean, the amount of structural engineering that went into these buildings in Anchorage following that quake, because it devastated the city. I mean, it truly did. It almost destroyed the largest metropolitan area in Alaska. And if you think about Alaska, there's about 400, 450,000 people in Alaska, which is shocking when you think about some place like Metro Atlanta, where there's over 300,000 people who live in the city alone, much less the metropolitan area. But of the 400 and 450,000 people who live in Alaska, 300,000 of them live in Anchorage, which is right in the center of where this massive earthquake happened just 40 years ago. And the Federal Emergency Management Agency, all of our friends at FEMA, I know we love them to death, right? They say that there is not a single state or territory in the U.S. that is not susceptible to earthquakes.
Well, that's good to know.
Well,
we're not safe anywhere we go.
Yeah, you can get hit by an earthquake, even in D.C. Remember the earthquake back a couple years ago?
I do, actually. It was August 23rd of 2011. We had quite a few in 2011 earthquakes, and that one actually did some damage to the Washington Monument, to where people couldn't go up to the Washington Monument and do their tours.
And folks, we're coming up on a commercial break. I'm starting to hear our bumper music. We'll be back in a few minutes to talk more about some historical earthquakes and other ways that you can be prepared for the big one. You're listening to Ready Radio on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.
And now back to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy.
Welcome back, folks. We've been talking about earthquakes, and Aaron and I, during the break, we were discussing, you know, some of the implications of this. We were talking in the last segment about the big quake in Anchorage that I'm familiar with. We mentioned the quake in Japan, the quake in D.C., and, you know, there have been a lot of earthquakes in the Midwest recently, too, and some of this has been blamed on the fracking drilling and some of the other things that are going on in the Midwest, but it was either Kansas or Nebraska has had more earthquakes in the first 6 months of 2014 than in the last 10 years combined. I mean, we're seeing seismic activity all the way around this country, and it's not something that's localized just in California. And a lot of people think, well, you know, California is where all the earthquakes happen, and one day the big one's going to hit, and California's going to fall off into the ocean, and I don't have to worry about that because I don't live there. But that's just not true. When you have earthquakes that hit in D.C., when you have earthquakes in the Midwest, I mean, these are scary things. And then to learn that we have something called the New Madrid Fault Line that's running right through Missouri, and that there were massive earthquakes there in the past, and you find out that there's a fault line in North Carolina that actually has a nuclear power plant over it. I mean, these are scary prospects. And this, you know, is a good lead-in to talk about what happened in Japan, because here you had a 1-2 punch, really a 1-3 punch. You had the earthquake, you had a tsunami, and then you had a major nuclear disaster all at the same time.
Yeah, and people didn't know what to do about the first thing, much less the second or third. So they were scrambling for shelter, for help, for food, for water, for clothing, for family members they couldn't find, and their lives were complete turmoil.
Well, with the tsunami factor, and this is for anybody who lives in a coastal area. You know, you're talking about Washington, Oregon, California, Alaska, and the eastern seaboard. We don't see major tsunamis on the eastern seaboard as often because it's not as seismically active as the Pacific is. But, you know, there was the tsunami that hit the Philippines. There was the tsunami in, was it Jakarta or Sumatra, one of the islands in the South Pacific. Massive, massive waves that hit because of these earthquakes that are going on because of all the volcanic and geologic activity of the Ring of Fire. But it could just as easily happen on the East Coast with a rogue wave or a massive tsunami that would, you know, flood an area. And here we are with an earthquake, okay, in Japan. The first thing that hit was the earthquake, and it was a massive earthquake, and people felt it for hundreds of miles from the epicenter. And the first thing that we learn to do in an earthquake is to get out from in the building, because there's a possibility of the building collapsing on you, one, and there's a possibility of fires, too. So you go outside. All right, so everybody goes outside, and then there's a 130-foot wall of water that crashes down on you. Now, if you were in your building, you would have been protected from the water, but then it would have collapsed on you.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, your building could have washed away. I mean, if you look at some of the buildings in these little tribal towns on the coast of Japan, and I mean, they're not in the big cities. They're little areas that, and the buildings really were not all that strong. I mean, it's kind of like visiting a fishing village in Alaska. They wave comes in, it's 130 foot tall, washed a lot of the buildings away.
Well, that was one of the things that in my research I ran across, was whole villages were completely just, they were obliterated. There was nothing left between the earthquake and then the buildings were damaged by the earthquake, and then they get hit by the wave, and everything's washed away. And there's no good answer. I mean, there's really nothing you can do to harden your home against a magnitude 9.0 earthquake followed by a 130-foot wall of water.
Well, the issue with the wall of water is there was warnings about the wall of water coming. They had tsunami warnings every time. They have tsunami warnings. The problem is these people are not prepared to be able to receive these warnings. They don't have a radio that would withstand the power outages, that would run off solar energy or wind up like the ones they sell at True Prep.
Right.
You know, these people were unable to receive the warnings, so they're out combing the beach for their family members. They're combing the city for their family members, and they're trying to find clean water, and all of a sudden they get washed away. When they had the warnings, they could have gone to higher ground.
Well, I think that there's a factor of burnout here, too, because like you said, whenever there's a tsunami danger, they put out a warning. But how often do you have a major tsunami that obliterates a part of a country? Very infrequently. So you hear these warnings over and over and over. It's kind of like hearing, you know, severe thunderstorm warnings. Well, you know, it never hits my house, so I'm sure that there's a severe thunderstorm somewhere, but why is it so important? Well, the reason it's so important is because when it does hit, it's devastating. And all they had to do to survive the tsunami was move 6 miles inland.
Or
the highest water, the 130-foot wave, the highest point it reached was 6 miles inland from the coast.
And get to the highest ground they could.
Yeah. I mean, that's all it would take. And it's such a simple preparation. And, I've told this story on this show before about when the ice storm hit. You know, my family was stuck at True Prep overnight, and we just made the owners were gracious, and they let us stay there, and we just made a camping night of it, and it was fantastic. And then the next time we had a warning of an ice storm, I packed them up, and I drove to Valdosta. I went and stayed with family. And the reason was I didn't want to get stuck in an ice storm again. Now, did the ice storm, was it a catastrophic event that, you know, thousands of people died in? No, but why go through a couple of days without power with little kids if you can just leave and have the safety and the comfort and vacation all rolled into one? And here I am looking at this, and then you've got people who get the warning, you know, you got to get out of here. There might be a typhoon or a tsunami coming, and the people are like, I don't know. I don't know if it's that important. I don't think that, you know, it's going to happen to me. And it's 6 miles would have saved thousands of lives.
Well, we see the same kind of reaction with tornado warnings in our own local area. We go, we get tornado warnings all the time. They never touch down. And then when they touch down, you hear of somebody getting thrown in their vehicle, staying in their car. Or they didn't take shelter and their baby got sucked out of their arms. And it's like, well, you know, the warnings are here for a purpose. And I kind of go a little crazy when I hear the warnings.
Seriously, it is the ostrich effect. And this affects everybody. I know our listeners have family members who just ignore everything. I know that I've got family members who ignore everything, don't want to think about it. It's not happening to me. But when you get down to it, you've got to be prepared. You've got to be ready. You've got to be able to say, no, there are things that we can do. There are important things that we can do to be better prepared and be ready for whatever's coming next.
Oh, yeah. And you always have to make sure that you have that preparedness plan in your head, that you know what you would do in this situation. What would we do in the event of an earthquake? What would we do in the event of a tornado? What would we do? And
mindset,
your whole family needs to know.
Mindset, mindset, mindset. It's the first making the realization that you need to get ready and need to do something. And I think that that's where we're going with this earthquake discussion, because there are simple things that can be done that can really earthquake-proof your home to a much greater degree. And there, you don't have to have a structural engineer come in. You don't have to reinforce every wall. You can just make some simple changes using nothing more than stuff that you would find in your local Walmart to be able to make your home much safer in the event of an earthquake. Even here in Atlanta or in New York City or in Minneapolis or in Salt Lake City, it doesn't matter. Even if you're nowhere near a fault, these are things that won't cost you an arm and a leg, but will make your house safe for an earthquake and even make it safer for your toddler. I think that, you know, there are things that we can do that are incredibly important. Just simple things like putting latches on cabinet doors. I mean, when I was doing some back research on ways to, you know, really improve the structural integrity of your home, one of the most important things that you can do for an earthquake is simply, well, try this. Okay, Aaron, think of your home like a boat. I watched Poseidon this last week,
yeah.
Okay? And that's a movie that stars Kurt Russell. It's a remake of an even greater movie called The Poseidon Adventure, which starred Ernest Borgnine, who is a fantastic actor. And I would encourage everyone to go out and watch one of those two movies before the end of the week, because it will give you an idea of what ways to make your home safer in an earthquake. The plot line of Poseidon is that there's this giant cruise ship that gets rolled over by a rogue wave. And so we've got the water from the tsunami, and you've got everything shaking. In fact, shaking a lot more than an earthquake would. So you see what happened on the ship when it rolled over. You know, all the stuff goes flying, all the cabinets pop open and things. Well, in a real ship, on a real, you know, like working, functioning, ocean-going vessel, all of the stuff is latched down all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all of the drawers latch, all of the cabinets latch, the stuff on the stove clicks into place.
Like in an RV.
Yeah, like in an RV. And why is everything like that in an RV?
Because it could get shaken, rattled, and rolled at any moment.
Absolutely. I mean, you could be driving down the freeway in your RV, and then there's some yahoo in a truck in front of you with a recliner in the back, and the recliner comes flying out and smashes into the front of your RV. And next thing you know, you're slamming on your brakes and trying to avoid crashing into somebody and saving the lives of yourself and your family, and stuff goes flying everywhere.
Didn't this just happen to you yesterday, like a chair in the middle of the road?
There was a chair in the middle of the road right near my house, but it did not happen to me, fortunately. But all of this stuff, you know, comes flying out of the covers. But if they're latched, if they're held down, if things are held in place with magnets and with latches and reinforced, then you don't have to worry about flying debris.
And these latches are so affordable. They sell them in the infants department at your local Walmart. You can just go in and buy these latches and spend till 3 a.m. like installing them. And of course, your children are going to be able to get into them quicker than you are,
because
that's the way childproofing always works. But they will keep your cabinets closed in the event of an earthquake.
And the other thing is strategic placement of the things that are going on inside the cabinets. The stuff you put in the cabinets need to be strategically placed. And then want to make sure that if it does tip over, even in the cabinet, that you don't have chemicals together that could mix in such a way that would cause toxic fumes or that could, you know, ignite. And that's a big concern. We'll talk a little bit more about placement of different items in the home when we come back from our commercial break. Folks, you're listening to Ready Radio this week with Doug and Aaron on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.
And now, back to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Ready Radio with Doug and Aaron, and we are talking this week about earthquakes. And in our last couple segments, we talked a little bit about some big historical earthquakes. We talked a little bit about what happened in Japan. All of this was brought up in our minds by the earthquake that had just hit San Francisco last weekend. And here we are thinking about ways that we can make our home safer and more earthquake-proof, but not just earthquake-proof. And that's the beauty of about the some of the things that we're going to be discussing in this segment here, is that it's not just earthquake-proof. It does a lot of good for your home in a lot of different ways, particularly like the child latch. Now, if you have no young children that ever enter your home whatsoever, maybe having child latches seems superfluous. But for the rest of us who have had kids, who have friends who have kids, who have, you know, sisters and brothers who have kids and they come over, just having a little latch on that thing is a good idea in general. But it also helps protect your home so that when an earthquake hits, that you don't have things come flying out of the shelves at you.
I mean, if you put child latches on every cabinet, then that would-be criminal who's not all that bright may have a little bit of trouble going through your stuff.
There you go. And I've said it before and I'll say it again, the police don't catch the sharp, smart and fast ones. So your assorted sharp stuff would be safe in that drawer with the latch on it compared to if it was hanging over your bed, let's say.
Well, let's not hang the assorted sharp stuff over the bed. I mean, everybody likes their samurai sword, but you probably shouldn't hang it over the bed without its sheath, just in case.
Yeah, or having, you know, that dangling anvil over the guest bed anyway.
Wow. dangling yeah. anvils. I am not coming to your house.
Well, you know, we decorate in funny ways sometimes, and a lot of people tend to put large and heavy objects up, and that's another no-no for, you know, surviving an earthquake, is to not have your don't put your bowling ball collection on the top shelf, because when they start rolling, you know, it's like out of the Looney Tunes, wonk 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 wonk.
You want that in the bottom of the closet, people.
You want a lot of things on the lowest shelf possible. You want to have your shelves firmly secured so they don't pop open, and these are really basic ideas. Now we move into some things that are more zoning based, and one of the biggest problems with an earthquake isn't the quaking, like I said before, it's the fires that come up after, because you have all of the gas mains start to rupture, and it only takes one little spark and you've got a horrible disaster and a burning fire out of control.
And see, I'm going to refer back to my childhood for a second. My father was very, very careful about making sure everything was off in the house when we would go on vacation when I was a kid. So he'd go in the basement, he would turn off our gas main, our water main, unhook the power. And it was his way of preparing for the things that we couldn't foresee. You know, what if something ruptured while we were gone? It would do major damage to the house. It could cost thousands of dollars to fix it. And he just saw this as his way of preparing for it. But he always thought it was very important that everybody know where these items are. Where is your gas main shut off for your home? Your water main shut off for your home? Your breaker box? And everyone who is responsible for the house should know where these items are and how they work.
Exactly. I had an experience on Thanksgiving Eve, okay, the evening before Thanksgiving Day. You know, everybody's out of town, all the plumbers are out of town, and all of a sudden, I see water on my kitchen floor. And lo and behold, the hot water heater had broken. Okay, so what do? You go behind the water heater and you turn the water off to it, right?
It's not that easy. There's a lot of water in that tank.
Well, I could live with the 55 gallons in the tank a lot better than I could the fact that that shutoff valve behind had rusted and cracked.
Oh.
So I could not turn the water off. So it was endlessly trying to fill the tank that was leaking through the bottom in vast quantities.
So then your only other option is the water main for the whole house,
yep.
Which is no water
for the whole house.
Dinner.
Yep. Yeah. I went underneath the house, got the water main, turned it off for the entire building. And then we spent the next 4 days waiting for a plumber. The earliest they could get there was Sunday evening.
And then you had Chinese turkey that year for Thanksgiving, right? Like the Christmas story?
Actually, we did everything as we would normally have done. The only tricky part was flushing the toilets, because I didn't have quite enough water to flush the toilets on an hourly basis like most American families do. But I had over 100 gallons of water stored up in the house, and which was more than enough to get us through 4 days of having the water turned off.
And see, this is very important, having these things stored up. You know, when we were looking up the Japanese earthquake of 2011, I found that there were 4.4 million homes without power after that disaster, which I'm not talking people here, 4.4 million homes. So let's translate that into the average American family of four people.
2.2 or so in Japan, and then you're looking at over almost 10 million people who don't have electricity.
How about 1.5 million homes without water?
And that's a huge deal. I mean, there are a lot of people out there who say, you know what, I'm a prepper. You know why I'm a prepper? Because I've got myself a life straw.
A life straw.
Now, that's awesome, as long as you've got water there that you can suck up through your life
straw.
Well,
there's always mud puddles after a tsunami.
There you go. And the downside is that you can't take the water with you because it's just a straw, and you have to have access to water somewhere. Whatever filtration method you have, Berkey, Life Straw, Katadyn, that's not the issue. The issue is making sure that you have stored up some water so that in an emergency you can get to it. And you don't have to, if you have a good filtration system, you can scrounge for water eventually. But that first 24 to 48 hours, you're not going to be able to get out and about like you need to. So you've got to have 2 to 5 days' worth of water stored up on hand for every person in the household or anyone you anticipate coming to your household in the event of disaster.
And if you are prepared, if you are the person who's prepared, your family is going to turn to you. The people that are in trouble in your life who are not prepared are going to be looking for you and trying to get help from you.
And, you know, we can say all the day that, you know, it's my stuff and you didn't help prepare and you got to go away. But when it's your sister, when it's your son, when it's your elderly mother,
you're not
going to
turn them away.
No, you're not. And so you've got to be ready for them, too. And this is this. I mean, it's a heart-rending process to go through to realize that. But water is not that expensive. Water is the cheapest commodity we have here in the U.S. I was listening to a story on NPR while I was driving through North Carolina a couple of months ago about water problems. And they had the director of a water filtration system there talking about their water and how cheap water was, you know, for the amount of effort that goes into it. Clean, dependable, regular water is a huge luxury worldwide. But in America, it's a given. Everybody has running water. Even if you live out in the middle of nowhere, you've got a well, and you've got an electric pump, and you've got, you know, a filtration system under the house, and you've got clean, dependable, turn on the tap, it's their water. And when you turn on the tap and the water goes,
you know it's time to change the filter.
Either that or you know you're really in trouble.
Yeah.
Because what are you going to do when you don't have water?
You better hope you have got some stored.
Exactly. And I know that there are people who live in apartments who can't have a 55,000-gallon cistern, and there are people who live in subdivisions and you can't do rain barrels because your autocratic HOA won't let you have a rain barrel even to save your life.
It's still very important to make sure you have at least a gallon of drinking water per family
person,
member
per day.
For 72 hours.
Exactly. And that you can store up in a closet. In fact, and we're going to be coming up on True Prep's Product of the Week very shortly, but I think that this week's Product of the Week really should be the water brick, because it gives you a way to store this water in an efficient manner that's actually earthquake-proof.
And the kids can play with it. It's like giant Legos.
You can build yourself a Viking ship.
No kidding.
So we'll talk about the Product of the Week coming up in the next segment. But there's lots of things that you can do to make your home more ready for earthquakes. And in this aspect, I think the earthquake is a lot like our zombie references. Because if you're ready for zombies, you're ready for anything. If you're ready for earthquakes, once again, you're ready for anything. You're going to have a medical kit. You're going to have a portable shelter, because you may not be able to stay in your home if it has structural damage. You're going to have some portable food. You're going to have portable water and a way to filter water. Water on the move. And those four things are the basic essentials for preparedness in any disaster, including earthquakes.
And I believe, you know, you meet people all the time, they're like, I'm a prepper. I believe that a very integral part of being prepared is to have a portable shelter and blankets. And so I have built my life around having a tent and sleeping bags. I believe sleeping bags are very necessary. Even if you don't ever use them, you never know when you're going to be needing to use them. And
they
you
don't
can just
take,
grab them and go.
They don't take up much space if you lay them out flat. Put them in the trunk of your car. Just lay two of them flat in the trunk of your car. You will never notice that space taken up, and you will always have a place to stay.
And if people here in Atlanta had sleeping bags in their trunks when they were stranded out here on Interstate 75, Interstate 20, it wouldn't have been as bad when they ran out of gas and were freezing in their cars.
Exactly. I mean, these are simple preparations. I mean, we talk about preppers, and people think, oh, I'm going to be a prepper, so that means I got to buy 10 years worth of freeze-dried food and have a bunker. I mean,
no.
Aren't those the jokes you always hear when you start talking about Ready Radio or being a prepper? They say, oh, do you have a bunker? No, I don't have a bunker. I have a way of living.
It's being a prepper doesn't mean that we're abnormal and we live like recluses in a little hole in the ground with all of our food stored. And we're like, my precious, you know, it's not like that.
Gollum was a prepper, but he only prepped for one thing, his ring. There you
my
go.
My precious.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, folks. So we're not going to eat any more of those brownies today. And in spite of that, we're going to finish up the show in a few minutes. I want to encourage all of you to check out our new Twitter feed. We are actively on Twitter again, and we have our Facebook page. There's going to be a whole bunch of new changes to a brand new Ready Radio program coming up starting next week, including a new time slot. So we'll talk about that. We're going to discuss a little bit more about earthquakes and general preparedness. We're going to hit the True Prep Product of the Week and other exciting changes coming to the program. All this after the break. Stay tuned. You're listening to Ready Radio on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.
And now, back to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy.
Welcome back, everybody. Over the break, Erin and I were talking about the earthquake preparedness plan, and she has some points that she's going to discuss that are the key things that you can do to be really prepared for an earthquake.
Well, you know, we talk with our kids about fire prevention and fire safety and what would happen if our house caught on fire. Where do you meet? In the yard. You pick a spot in the yard. You meet there. Everybody gets out, and then you can account for your whole family. Well, in an earthquake, it's kind of the same thing. You need to be able to account for everyone. So even if everyone's not together, say you're at work, your kids are at school, your husband's at work, you need to be able to account for everybody, make sure everybody's safe, and determine who's going to do what to get everything accomplished.
And what's part of this is knowing to use the text rather than the telephone, because the telephone system is made to handle hundreds of thousands of calls. The text system is made to handle hundreds of millions of texts. So if you send a text, "I'm okay, are you too?" it only takes a few characters to send that text, and then you get a response, "Yes." And you know that the person you're talking to is fine, or "Yes, I have all the children with me." Poof. Now you've freed up a whole phone line for emergency communications for people who are trapped or in fear of dying.
Right. And that's very important. But also very important is to know ahead of time, what is the plan? So you say to your husband, "In the event of an earthquake, you go after the dog. I'm going after the kids." I would say this would probably be very...
Family specific,
and who's closest to what? You know, if I'm closer to the kids, I'd go after the kids. If he was closer to the kids, of course, it would make more sense for him to go after the kids and me go after the dog. The dog can sustain himself for a little while. The children, maybe not so much. You want to make sure that your offspring are safe and protected.
And this goes into teaching them how to, you know, be able to function on your own. A 3-year-old obviously can't, but a 14-year-old can do quite well by themselves for an extended period of time if they have just some basic things. And that was something we covered on a previous show, was bug out bags for kids in school. And that's a good idea. I mean, this all goes into a general mindset, not of fear, but of preparedness.
Right. You also want to prepare your family for where would we meet up if we couldn't go home. So if there's a situation where our neighborhood is shut down, there's been, even a tornado in your neighborhood, and your house is just destroyed, and there's debris everywhere, and you cannot get home, or there's a fire from an earthquake, and you cannot get home, where would your family meet up to get all together to make sure everybody's safe, everybody's not injured?
The Superdome.
That sounds like a really bad idea.
Yeah, well, you know, it works so well for Katrina.
It seems like church would be a better place.
Or Walmart.
I don't think that's the greatest idea.
You don't think that there would be hundreds of people at Walmart calmly getting the things they need and paying in line?
I think that it would be an awful situation with looting and gang violence. That's just my theory.
And that's even before we have a disaster.
Sometimes, yes, sometimes. I mean, we could do like Doug and meet at Troop Rep.
Yeah, well, you know, everybody's welcome at Troop Rep. Everybody is always welcome at Troop Rep. So that is a great place to go in a time of need or disaster.
I say the shooting range would be the best place.
It would probably be empty, although, you know, downtown Atlanta might be a shooting range at that point. You never know.
Shooting the basketballs.
There you go. Well, I was at the... at the grand opening of Cabela's in Acworth, and my goodness, what a store. Wow. I mean, it's huge.
It is gigantic.
And it has everything you could imagine in it. And I'm walking through there, and they have a video game set up where the bonus level, it's a shooting game with rifles. You know, you shot moose or deer or something, but the bonus level was shooting basketballs as they go bouncing by. And every time you shoot a basketball, it goes straight into the basketball goal in the background.
That was awesome.
It was very, very humorous. But, you know, we're sitting here looking at ways that we can be better prepared, you know, before an earthquake. And these sound so familiar to being better prepared for a fire and being better prepared for a riot and being better prepared for everything.
And it does apply to everything. You know, you want your emergency food rations for everyone in your house for at least 72 hours. Same thing with water. You want a first aid kit. Not only for your family, but you want to always have a little extra. You don't know who you're going to encounter that may need a Band-Aid or an antibiotic cream or something. I mean, there's going to be injuries all around you should a major disaster occur.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, having a good medical kit, having food and having water. And this brings us to the Troop Rep product of the week. And I alluded to it earlier, being the water bricks. I know that Troop Rep was selling them buy three, get one free, which is 25% off the manufacturer's suggested retail price, which is a phenomenal value. These things stack on each other. They hold around 2 gallons of water. And you can put a pipe through them so that they become solid. And they're so solid that they're not going to slide around. They're not going to slide off. And you can actually build with them. You could build a table or you could build a workbench with these bricks underneath it as a support structure. And then you would have, you know, 20 or 30 gallons of water safely secured, stored in your house, easily accessible, easily portable, because they're only 2 gallons per brick. So you're not going to be trying to move a 480-gallon, 55-gallon drum of water around that you need a pallet jack to be able to shuffle it around, or in heaven help you if you had to take it upstairs. But this is portable, it's stackable, it's usable. And it's affordable when you're getting buy three, get one free, you know, 25% off your total purchase. And I can't recommend it highly enough.
Fill the basement with them with water and let the kids use them as a fort.
Shoot, they're even ballistic protection. There's nothing that slows down bullets like water does.
You know, I made that exact same comment to one of the guys over at True Prep the other day, and he looked at me like I had lost my mind.
Well, I suppose that not everybody worries about getting shot at as much as us radio personalities. Yeah, people at True Prep probably don't have as much ire directed their way, and you know, all they have to do is deal with customer service and sell wonderful products that everybody wants to begin with. So I would imagine it's a relatively stress-free position compared to where you might get shot at on a daily basis. So, you know, folks, stop by True Prep and take a look at their water bricks, take a look at some of the other things they have. You know, swing by your local area Walmart or Target, get yourself some hooks for your cabinets. That's a great way to make them more secure, both for the earthquake and for other things that go on. These are important tips that we can take. I mean, I know that there's more that we can do to be prepared for an earthquake.
I say contact your local American Red Cross and inquire about first aid and CPR classes, because the life you save may be your child's, and the person you educate may end up saving your life.
And Aaron, aren't you certified by the American Red Cross to teach CPR classes?
Yes.
And how did you get into that?
It's been a long road through volunteer rescue originally when I was about 17 and 18 years old.
So for all of your adult life, you've been involved in emergencies and trying to help others?
In one way or another, yes.
It's really impressive to see people who have dedicated their lives to the idea of helping others through a disaster or an emergency. I mean, I kind of hold myself in a different regard. I have helped people who have been through disasters in their lives, or legal disasters where horrible things have happened to them through no fault of their own, and I was able to shepherd them through their case. But I don't have it in me to be the person who's on scene when somebody has a broken leg or is bleeding out, and I can't do that personally.
I wasn't able to do that. I can't handle the blood, in all honesty. I kind of pass out. I'm a little squeamish. If it's not my own blood, it's not as bad as when it's somebody else's, but it's still pretty bad. It's hard. But it's easier to educate people who do have that ability to stand there and look at that blood and be in the middle of ground zero. And that's my way of giving back to the world. I'm also giving back in other ways, though. I don't just do those kind of classes anymore. I'm also doing classes now at True Prep, which will be soap making classes, canning classes, dehydration classes. We're going to do a lot of different classes coming up at True Prep in the next few months. So have people be checking the website for that.
Well, that's very cool. And checking the website's an important part of all this, because there's going to be a brand new Ready Radio website in about another week. And I know that we have a lot of listeners who listen to us on the podcast, either through iTunes or through www.readyradio.net. But there's going to be a brand new readyradio.net coming up as we start to branch out. There's going to be more stations carrying us. There's going to be more opportunities for people to get involved. We're looking at having a members-only section of the website, where you can get exclusive content and more ways to be prepared, and more, you know, arts, crafts, recipes, things that will help you with your homesteading and your general living. And so these are all new opportunities that are coming up from Ready Radio, including a brand new time slot. This is going to be our last time at the 5 o'clock hour on Saturday. We're moving from 5 o'clock in the afternoon to 8 to 9 in the morning. So when you get up on Saturdays, while you're making your Saturday morning breakfast, cooking your farm fresh eggs, getting ready to go out and do some milling or machining or whatever it is you do for your weekend to have some productivity and get it done, tune into Ready Radio as you start your day, and you're going to be able to listen to us talk about an upbeat and exciting topics that are educational and fun for the family, that are important and help you be more prepared for the future in everything you do. We would encourage you to send us an email at info@readyradio.net, because we are going to be taking more and more requests. We are looking at having the ability to have some people call into the show, and if your question is a good question and something that is going to be interesting to a large section of the population, we might contact you. So when you send your email with the questions for us, give us your contact info. If you give us an email address or if you give us your phone number, we might call you and have you be on the show as a person asking the True Prep question of the week, which should be starting up maybe when we start the new Ready Radio at 8 o'clock next Saturday morning. So, folks, this has been a really great topic. It has been fun being in studio with Aaron this week. I hope that you've all enjoyed the show. You've been listening to Ready Radio here on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town. We will be back next Saturday at our brand new time with more information and another great topic. Enjoy your weekend.
You've been listening to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy. It's emergency preparedness for everyone. Brought to you by True Prep. For all your prepping needs, visit True Prep online at truprep.com or visit a True Prep store in Roswell or Marietta. Tune in each week as Doug and Amy get you ready for anything that comes your way. Ready Radio, Saturday evenings at 5, only on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.